What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Hello. Happy Monday.
Here we are. Today, we were wanting to start a conversation that we expect will be an ongoing conversation. So we're not planning on, there's no tidy bows in this discussion today, but we want to talk about paradigms and the fact that no matter what we do or what choices we make, we are creating an entire paradigm for our kids and their understanding of the world as they grow up and move away from us and out into the world on their own. We are creating their first and foundational paradigm. Not only do we expect this conversation to keep going, but we're inviting a guest on next week who is going to help us think through this really intimidating setup and offer us some frameworks to hopefully ground us or help us figure out how we want to move through these questions. So I think to start, Caitlin, this was the question that you have been bringing up a lot, and you have a lot of very specific ideas about. So could you frame for us what it is that we are wrestling with in this episode?
Yeah, I think a question is a very generous explanation of what I've been bringing to you, because I think I have like a whole compartment of baggage around ideas of paradigms. And I don't even know what the question is, except for what the hell is this? Ever since I got pregnant, I've been like, holy shit, I am building the entire world that a whole human is coming in to understand. And he will shape his understanding of the world through the lens of what I have contextualized as normal. So when I'm thinking about what is a paradigm, the context of normal, the patterns that we're perpetuating, kids are just like these meaning makers, and they're just like on alert for patterns and to understand things. And so this framework that I'm building, he's like making all these connections. And the responsibility of that feels enormous and often really tangled for me and wrapped up in a lot of religious trauma and childhood shit. So I think my question is like, what is the question? Like, how are we talking about this? What makes it so messy? How do we do it well? And the way that I'm thinking about this conversation right now is kind of like, what is our backstory? Like, what are our thoughts or noodly feelings? What is the spaghetti soup in our brain so that we have some understanding of where we're coming from as we uncover this? It feels like a core question of the podcast. How do we want to build the world that our kids are living in? What kind of world do we want to build?
Yeah, well, honestly, now that you say that, it does feel a little bit like if we were to define what a paradigm is or what it is that we're building for our kids, in some ways, to me, it feels like it is a script. It is a script that is like built into them so much so that they might not even be able to name what it says. Like you said, it's a script about what is normal, or it's a script about what is right and wrong or good or bad. It's a script about like who we are as people, or a script like for my son Otto, I'm thinking I'm helping him build a script around who he is and who the world is and what his relationship to the world is. That is so big and weighty and intimidating. So you spoke a little bit about, you use the word baggage, right? The baggage that you're, is that, I don't want to put that on you if that's not the word you
No, I wrote, my literal notes said, I'm coming to this conversation as an ex-evangelical with a cargo bay of baggage.
Ooh, okay. The cargo bay of baggage. Talk a little bit about that. When you are thinking about building this paradigm, what is the weight of that baggage, or how is it influencing how you feel showing up as a parent?
In my parenting, I think about it a lot in these more like little concrete ways, like whether or not we watch Paw Patrol feels like part of the paradigm I'm building for him. And the reasons behind why I'm pro or anti Paw Patrol are rooted in my values. I grew up with so many rules, and well, the rules of conduct were like shifting based on whatever church we were going to or how stable or not my dad's mental health was. And it was confusing because the stakes were really high. It was like eternal damnation, burning in a pit of fire, high. As a kid, everything carried that weight. And my whole world revolved around it. School revolved around it. Church revolved it. Well, my whole life revolved around church, and everything was inside that world. I carry that with me now. And so knowing that I'm like shaping the way that my kids use the world and other people is like almost too much for me to hold because of the way that I was impacted by the paradigm I was given. The thing that's the scariest, which we have talked about together, is that I know that my parents were really trying their best to raise me well and to keep me safe from harm. They really, really believed that if I didn't follow their rules completely, I would go to hell. Sometimes it's like wild for me to think about the amount of terror that must have been in their body and the panic, the suffering that they experienced. It's hard for me to even like breathe through the grief that I know that they feel, because on a level, they really believe that I am going to burn in eternal fires for eternity. I feel that grief for them. And there's so much of my life that I do not share with them because I cannot imagine inflicting that sort of pain onto them.
So I hear you saying that you were given a paradigm that was very rigid with super high stakes, that you have suffered through that paradigm, like that paradigm caused harm for you in a way that is lasting, that you're still trying to undo. And therefore, if the consequence of both of those things is that you, A, don't want to pass on the same paradigm, but have to start from scratch to rebuild something, which is just hard in the day-to-day moments of everyday life with Charlie. Every decision is like blank sheet of paper. What do I do in this moment? And then B, that fear that even with your best intentions, there might still be some kind of paradigm that Charlie has to undo for himself, or like that you might actually cause harm in the paradigm you create for him, which is the last thing on earth you want to do.
Yeah, like on a really good day, I'm like, this is a religious trauma. And then I can like be like, okay, I put that, it goes really tidy in that box and I understand it and I have context. And I'm like, okay, the paradigm for this sphere is that it's religious trauma. But then there's other days, more days than not, where like the darkness is thick. Am I unwittingly doing the same thing, but on the other, like just, did I just flip the coin? Like what structures am I holding to so rigidly that I'm like limiting his ability to see something else?
In some way is like not letting Charlie watch Paw Patrol the same thing as your parents, not letting you listen to like NSYNC or something. I don't know what the equivalent would be, but yeah, like how do you decide? How do you know what quote unquote right choice is there? I resonate with that a lot. I have this image in my head that the upbringing that I had was in this little snow globe where everything really fit really well in that snow globe. And it was really cozy in there. And there was an answer for everything. And we knew the path and the map. And like that was the whole universe. And the life I am building with my kid feels more like we're out in the tumbleweeds, like outside of that. And we have like one tiny little campfire that we're trying to keep warm around. We don't know where we are exactly, you know, and like, I want to offer him a cozy snow globe. I want there to be a warmth and like a whole universe we can understand. And I don't know what it even looks like to offer that. And I feel really just like I can hear the howling wind and there's not this like glass globe around us, like we're out here in the wild. And that's a, it's just like a really, I don't know, like desperate feeling I have sometimes.
Is it Virginia Woolf who writes about the bell jar? Sylvia Plath. Okay, so I'm simultaneously thinking about that bell jar and the way that she describes how it feels when it's lifted. And I haven't read that in ages. But also The Truman Show. When you started talking about the snow globe, The Truman Show fucks me up because I'm like, that was my childhood. It was so constructed, so perfectly created. And I think as parents, I have this instinct to construct the perfect snow globe, the perfect bubble, this perfect thing for my perfect little baby. And I think the instinct is really beautiful. And also, how do you know when it is turning harmful?
Well, and it feels like the problem, if there is one, with the snow globe is just that, like, either you stay in that one place forever or you have to break out of it. I don't know if this makes sense, but it's like, I can give you a paradigm that's really rigid and safe in its rigidity until it all breaks. And then what? So I do believe in my head that, like, creating a more flexible paradigm, or a paradigm that can travel, that can grow, that can evolve, that can stretch, to go back to like your string analogy image, is good. It's just really hard and scary and intimidating.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
Our goal for 2025 is to reach $900 on Patreon each month. This would cover our overhead so that we're not paying out of pocket each month to produce these episodes.
And just so you know where your money is going, the episodes are perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds. She runs her studio with a rare humanity, and we feel so good partnering with her.
If you believe in these episodes, if you enjoy these conversations and want them to keep showing up in your feed, would you consider joining our Patreon?
You can join for $5 a month, which comes out to $1.25 per episode. Such a deal.
If you can't support financially, there are lots of ways that you can rally around this podcast, sharing a favorite episode with a friend or on social media, leaving a 5-star review. All of that really helps us keep this thing afloat.
Thanks. We love you so much. Back to the show.
One thing for me that I think makes this really hard, and I think this is both something that is like a baggage and something that I see unfolding in real time, is just how little control I have over that paradigm. It goes back to the conversation we were having with Lisa Oliveira in a previous episode about the story that our child is creating. So part of it is like, so much of the story that Otto is creating about himself and about the world around him is happening apart from me. The experience he's having out in the world that I'm not there for, that he will not even have the language to talk to me about if he wanted to. So that's part of it, is that like, I don't have the control I would like as much. And that will continue to diminish as he gets older and spends more and more time away from me, which is also good, but complicated in the feelings. But the other part of it is that, like, even for the moments that I'm there for, I don't have control over the way that he interprets something or what he's even picking up from me that I don't realize. And I think about this both in my own history as I reflect and in what I see happening in real time. So, like, for me, a lot of my earliest experiences and what I was experiencing when I was the age that Otto is now was hospitals and doctors and medical experiences. And my parents were there for a lot of them, but they had no way to like hop inside my brain to see what paradigm I was building about who I am in the world because of these experiences. So I developed a lot of deeply ingrained patterns of like disconnecting from my body, of not believing that I was allowed to vocalize pain, of feeling like it was my responsibility to make people smile that I was like a symbol of something for people that I could offer, like I could inspire them in some way. Like I was developing all of that before I had language to understand that I was developing it. My parents were there for it and didn't know it was happening. And so that feeling of like me watching Otto in real time and not really knowing what he's pulling on and how he's understanding it as a four-year-old is terrifying to me. When he was 2 years old, and I know I told you about this in the time when it happened, and I'm sure I've told you about it many times since, but when he was 2 years old, he was drawing at our kitchen table right over there, and he like threw the markers away from him, and he said, and he like cried out, "I'm not good at drawing." And I just like, my whole body erupted and like, no, 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 no. That's not a story that we, you know, that's not the story. No, 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 no. That's not how we see you. That's not how you see you. Like really this frantic desperation to get in there and like revise the script in real time and not knowing how to do it. And I think my reaction was to actually make it much worse. I grabbed his hands and I looked in his eyes and I was like, everything you make with your hands is magic because you're the only one who made it or something like that, right? Like I'm trying to speak this new story in his head, which for all I know made him feel like everything he made with his hands had to be magic because his mom is like looking at him with this intensity, you know, like, and it's been something that he has stayed with him. He has like intense perfectionism. I have watched him put all of himself into making something that he literally rips up afterwards. It's devastating to me. I'm like watching this happen in real time. We're doing everything we can to like create experiences for him and to show him that we mess up all the time and that's part of the process and that's beautiful. Like all the things we can do to get in there and revise it. But like I cannot actually pull out his brain and twist the wires in a certain way and recreate it. Like I don't have the control over that I want. And so all that to say, I think part of what makes me feel absolutely frantic about this is actually how little control I have over it. I didn't think I was a controlling person. And here we are, absolutely peak control mom. Ah.
So it's like a completely different side of it, which is like just a new layer of terror.
Oh, you're welcome. That's why you came to me, right? You wanted me to just like pour some gasoline on the flames of this. The last thing I want to say about that Otto thing is that part of what is so eerie about watching that in him is that that is deeply in me and it is deeply in his dad. And so I know that the way we talk to him, the hopes that we have for how he thinks about creativity and expression and the things that he makes, we have a paradigm in mind in our heads that we would like him to absorb. And also, we don't absorb it ourselves. Like we struggle with that ourselves. And so I guess part of the layer of that is just this grief. It's sort of like that Ben Folds song, "Good morning, son. You're so much like me. I'm sorry." You know, that line in that song. And I sing that sometimes to Otto when he's going to sleep tonight at night. And I mean it. This is me. And I see me and you. And that's a part of me that has been so painful. And how can I protect you from that?
The tension between these two ways of thinking about this is we're so concerned with what is the normal? What is the thing I'm giving to you? What is this paradigm I'm shaping? I think ultimately are in our hope that we create some kind of adult human who is like brilliant and kind and thoughtful and whole. And also, no matter what we're doing, we have it's so little control. I mean, if my upbringing was very rigid and I am not living in that rigidity anymore, you know, like even though, and I would say that I have turned out beautifully. And there are things that were ingrained in me non-verbally, just like there are beautiful lived things and there are things that I'm trying to replicate in my parenting that was a part of the paradigm that I grew up in, like this free-flowing, explorative creativity, non-traditional education, thriftiness. Yeah, and we don't always know which things will stick, I guess. But that feels like the tension there is like, it matters so much. And also, we really have no control.
The stakes are so high, and we couldn't want better things. We only want to give gifts of abundance to our kids. And also, like, there is just the inevitability, I feel like, of struggle. I'm thinking you have turned out wonderfully, and you are continuing to evolve, and you have been through hard things. And that is not always, I've not known you your whole life, but I'm guessing if you're anything like me, sometimes that looked really messy. And like, your parents would look at that and be alarmed and afraid for you. I know mine have been many times. And also, like, we're doing okay. And I guess it's like hard to have open hands when I feel like I see my kid struggling in some way, to like see him as a person that's going to evolve and grow over time, and that this is like a long arc. I'm very quick to panic. And so I wonder if part of it is like trusting a process, trusting that the inevitability of some of this looking really messy sometimes, and not immediately going to like the red alert button that we all need to be in panic mode about this.
Is so we're wanting something steady to give them to a beautiful framework, this like magical globe, but that we don't want the globe to shatter, and we don't want the globe to limit them. So is this like steady framework our unending commitment and belief in evolution and change and fluidity and trust? Is the like steady thing the looseness with which we hold it, which is not, doesn't make sense in my brain, but like, is that the thing?
It feels like maybe it's like, in my mind, I'm not sure if this image will make sense to anyone else's brain, but to me, it's almost like this shift away from a script to a map, but like not a map with a charted path. It's sort of, I don't know if that makes sense, but something that feels more open and like, we're safe to explore and travel a certain distance and then pivot. And maybe that's speaking to that image that you have of like growth and evolution, that there's room to expand beyond something.
I have written down rule or relationship over rules. Where I was trying to get to the like, okay, there was so much rigidity that made so little space for like what was actually happening. Like, we were so dedicated to, we're so sure that if we did the right thing right now in this moment, no matter the immediate impact or harm, that in the future, in eternity, it would pay off. And I think even when we're not thinking of this as in an eternal way, but sometimes we can be like, if I just get it right in this moment, it'll be right forever. Instead of being like, be in that moment right then and respond to what's there, and not, instead of responding to what you want it to be like in the future. I think I'm grasping at tidy bows.
No, something to hold on to. I mean, like, please, something to hold on to. I feel like there's a couple of things that I have thought about as I've been processing this. And one of them is, and I don't know if this is super relevant, but I think about a lot, is like the difference between already having like this list of prescriptive imperatives or like tenets or things I need you to learn, Otto, and like putting that upon him, versus listening and like paying attention and seeing who he is, and being flexible in that moment of being present in whatever the thing is. I don't know if that's helpful for this conversation, but just that difference between, it feels like a different posture of curiosity and openness versus mandates and prescriptions. The other thing I'm thinking about a lot is, this has come up in a few of the conversations we've had with like Lisa Oliveira and the recent episode with Sasha Mardo, is just the actual importance of, okay, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to admit that this sentence feels really yucky to me. And then I'm like almost embarrassed by the fact that it makes me feel yucky. But like, the importance of investing in myself. I'm thinking about how Otto is developing this perfectionism that I carry so deeply, and that my mom carried so deeply. My mom has this story about how when she was in third grade, she used to erase her handwriting so many times on the paper that it like made holes in the paper, because she needed to get like each letter right. Auto literally does the same thing. I took a picture the other day to mark it in my brain of like that pattern. Like he erases things until it goes through the page. So there's this pattern in our family of that perfectionism and like it has to be right. And I have these images in my head of like my mom, she would carry like this little makeup bag with her. And before we went anywhere, she would like reapply makeup in the car mirror. That is like such a tiny habit that she had. She was not thinking about how I would absorb that or what that would mean to me, but just this way of like, oh, we're about to go out in public. It's time to prepare ourselves for that. And she wouldn't use this language, but for me, it's like absorbing that and seeing that like people were about to be seen, time to get ready to perform and get into our being seen mode. And I just think about the tiny ways that we communicate some of this baggage that we still hold, or some of these harmful, or these parts of us that are maybe taking over that are harming us, and how tending to that in myself actually truly is a way I can care for my son. And I'm embarrassed that I feel embarrassed by that. I think it's really important. I think it's truly deeply important in ways that go deep, deep, deep in the paradigm building that we're doing.
I just want to ask this question, whatever the question is, I'm not sure yet, to anyone that comes on the podcast and all the listeners, just like, what is this? How are you thinking about it? How is it manifesting for you? What kind of paradigms are you wanting to build? What ones were built for you? How are you reshaping them?
I do think part of the work is naming it. What I think about paradigms is they're like beliefs built into us that we don't realize that we have. Like you said, like those norms that are built into us that we don't even think of as norms because we have not seen it another way.
And the unspoken things that kids are learning or that we're learning are so much more potent often than the words or the language. But the language, once you can name it and reframe it, you can hear it and be like, oh, what? No, that's not the thing.
Yeah, I do tend to really overemphasize the words. And I feel like if I can get the words right, then he'll hear it and the script will be revised. And I do think that so much of it is that deep daily action, a million tiny ways that we show up to the world and they watch how we show up to the world and we watch how we show up to them. And really learning to, I mean, we've talked so much about the value cards and like what are our values and thinking, learning how to actually live from those values in a way that is really deep so that it becomes the oxygen in the air versus just the things written on the wall. Not to say that both of those things aren't important. I think they are.
What I think it's like, you have to name it to know the value that you're wanting to implement. And we have to name the things that aren't working, and then we have to live them out. And what they're really ingesting is these like repeated, they're making sense of patterns every time that we do something. If to us, it might not seem like that big a deal, but they're literally contextualizing every single thing that we do to make sense of the world and to assimilate so that they can belong and survive.
It is so hard to be a little person, and it is so hard to be a grown person. Okay, so we're having someone on next week who's going to help us. Help us think about this. Yeah, just like another way to get out of the way, I don't know, to like offer some way of grounding us, to maybe give us some tools to hold on to as we glide, ski, climb through this terrain. Glide, ski, climb.
I don't know. That was a lot of
verbs. Okay. All right. We'll circle back. Yes, we love you. If you want to comment on Patreon and let us know, you know, what makes this hard or how you're thinking about it or what your cargo baggage is on paradigms, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, your cargo bay of baggage. All right. Bye, bye, bye. We love you.
Bye, bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
This podcast is edited and perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.